When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A 1, 2, 3, 4.
Thanks for listening to this podcast produced by Diddy TV. Visit DiddyTV.com for more exclusive on-demand content or download the official Diddy TV app from your app store today. Welcome to Insights, everyone. Today, Amy Wright chats with multi-Grammy Award winners Kathy Fink and Marcy Marxer, who've just released a brand new 28-song album in collaboration with Tom Paxton. The album features world-class recordings of songs ranging bluegrass, folk, country, and various other flavors of American roots music. For those that don't know, Tom Paxton is a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award winner, considered a voice of his generation, with an important perspective on modern culture and civil rights. And Kathy Fink and Marcy Marxer are a one-of-a-kind duo with virtuosic abilities who have traveled the world performing and teaching roots music to generations of fans and followers. Kathy and Marcy are here to discuss their latest collaborative effort, All New, and the path that led them to where they are today. So stay tuned. From Diddy TV, this is Insights.
Are you guys in the D.C. area right now?
We're in Maryland right now, yeah. Silver Spring, Maryland.
Well, I spent many years on Capitol Hill, right down in that area of D.C., so I know the D.C. area very well, and the music scene there is a really great scene.
It's a great music scene,
really,
although, you know, I can't really say that we've been a big part of it for the last three years. I mean, it's starting to come back, and we've continued doing a few things. Like this week, we're launching our 14th annual ukulele festival at the Music Center at Strathmore. So,
okay, so I don't know if you guys were a part of this, but my husband and I participated in at the Strathmore. It was a ukulele get together where everyone got together and played This Land Is Your Land all together.
Marcy organized that.
You organized that, Marcy?
Fest.
Yep, for the Guinness Book of World Records. Yep, we did that.
Yeah, that was great. We were there.
Yeah, that was the second year. So now we're going into our 14th year, but the last 2 years have been virtual. This is our first in-person Uke Fest since the pandemic started.
That was fun, though. We had players who could prove they could play the chords from age 3 to 97.
Yeah, we actually learned that song on the ukulele. Both of us play other instruments. I play the violin and he plays the guitar, but we learned that song on the ukulele just to participate in the world record.
It's wonderful.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And thank you guys for joining me today. We're in Memphis, Tennessee, Diddy TV is. And
awesome.
But you know, obviously love the DC area and what you guys have done. And you have a new album out, All New. We're gonna get to that, but I kind of wanted to go back a little ways and find out a little bit about how you got together and all the other amazing things that you both have accomplished in your musical careers. And so I thought I would kind of start with each of you individually a little bit, and then we'll go to how you got together. How about that?
Start with Marcy. She's the good one.
Yeah, that's great, though. That's a good idea. Thank you.
So, well, I will start with you then, Marcy. Why don't we go back to your background? Where did you actually grow up? Was it the D.C. area or someplace else?
I grew up in Detroit.
Wow.
There was a lot of music. Motown was big. James Brown was big. There was a lot of blues, and there was a lot of country and bluegrass because people had come up to work in the factories up from the mountains. And so there was a really high percentage of acoustic players, whether they were playing acoustic bluegrass or country, or they were playing acoustic blues.
And you're a multi-instrumentalist. Was music always in your household? I mean, how did that happen for you?
It was always in my household. When I was a toddler, my uncle gave me my first guitar, and I don't remember it, but I remember him playing and having a great time. But legend has it that I grabbed it by the neck and I dragged it around the house screaming and then threw it on the floor and started banging on it. So, you know, the enthusiasm has always been there.
The skills improved a lot.
After a few years of playing, right?
Yeah.
So Detroit was, so that was the 60s in Detroit, 50s, 60s in Detroit?
Yeah, I was born in 56. So I was a little kid in Detroit in the 60s. It was a really interesting place to be and also to have diverse friends through music. It was very interesting.
And there was Motown there as well. So that's kind of an interesting combination of folk and traditional music. And then you obviously had the Motown sound as well.
Yeah, my parents were involved in civil rights. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my musical education really came from songs that we sang at marches and going to Black church. We were one of like four families, white families in a certain church downtown. And there was a great piano player and other great instrumentalists and an amazing choir. So my listening intensely to try to figure out what was going on in music happened then.
It sounds like a certain sense of being comfortable with activism may have started when you were young as well.
We didn't know any different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My mom started a group of moms and babies who would go to the Woolworths counter at an off time once a week, take their babies of different colors and set us all next to each other so we could reach out and touch each other and just be used to each other from the moment we were tiny.
Well, Memphis is a bit of a sister or cousin to Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
We had a lot of the same parallel experiences in the 60s, 70s, and beyond with civil rights. And actually, where Diddy TV is, if you come see us sometime, which we hope you do, we back up to the National Civil Rights Museum right in downtown.
We would love to come.
Yes, please do, because we love what you guys are doing. So I'm going to then move over to Kathy here and talk to you a little bit. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the suburbs of Baltimore. Again, in the 50s and 60s. I was born in 1953. I grew up around a little bit of music. My mother was a pretty good piano player. But I didn't have a lot of formal music training, and I did... I loved singing in choruses. I loved singing in choirs. I loved singing in groups. I loved Broadway music. I loved the music I heard on the radio. And at that time on WCAO radio, you heard a little bit of everything. There was none of this sort of divided pie of this station only plays that music and that station only plays that music.
I know.
So my daily diet of music was a little Motown, a little Roger Miller, a little Joni Mitchell, a little Leonard Cohen, a little The Weavers, whatever, you know. It was such a great mix of sounds. You know, the Rolling Stones and the Beatles would be on the same station as the Motown and you know, Irene Goodnight or whatever it might be. And I loved listening to that music. I took up guitar when I was about 12. Had about 6 months of lessons. My mother announced that the lessons were over, and I think her dream was so was the guitar, and her dream did not work out, but I stuck with it. And, you know, you were asking about my ribbon back there for first place at the Appalachian String Band Festival in banjo, and I never heard a banjo live and in person until 1972 when I moved to Montreal. And for 1 year, I went to McGill University. There was still the remainders of a coffee house scene there and a lot of really active folk music, activism attached to it. I became very involved in that. And that's where I heard the first banjo ever. And my very first lessons came from somebody who's still a dear friend, out in Calgary, Alberta. So you never know where this is going to come from.
You know, the Canadians have such a long history of roots music still. It's alive and well in Canada and, well, in the U.S. too, but it's really been a long tradition for them. So did you go to McGill to study music or something else?
No. First, I went to Oberlin College for 4 months, and I wasn't studying music, but I took some music classes. I got derailed by my January project, which took me out to the Navajo Indian Reservation to work at Rough Rock Demonstration School. And that was an eye-opening, incredible experience. And it's also where I first started playing music with kids and families, which has been a parallel track for us through all these years. When I went to McGill the following year, I was probably leaning towards majoring in something to do with early childhood, maybe special ed. But honestly, I just got swept up in the music world. And after a year of school up there, I just decided I got a grant. I got a grant to take a whole troop of people performing and touring around institutions in Montreal for the summer. We call them Only in Canada grants. And at the end of the summer, we did a lot of performances. I organized them all. I was 19 years old. There were about 10 of us. And at the end of the summer, I had about $700. And I went, you know, I'm going to try this music thing for a living. I've got $700. I'm totally rich with $700 in my pocket. And I have enough money to live on for a whole year. And at the end of the year, if I haven't made more money, then I'll know that I have to go back to school and do something else. And at the end of the year, if I'm still doing okay, then that's what I'm doing. And so I just started practicing and booking gigs. And, you know, that was 50 years ago.
So you've made that switch, and it's a good time when you're 19 years old because you've got everything ahead of you and, of course, no house to worry about and none of those things that we all end up with eventually. But what really attracted you to Appalachian music? What was it that really drew you to that?
For me, it was very circuitous because my exposure to Appalachian music, or as close as I could come to it, as a kid was, you know, watching bluegrass on the Beverly Hillbillies. That's not exactly the exposure that you want to stick with, you know, even though it was good music. But in Montreal, I came across people playing the Appalachian dulcimer, the hammer dulcimer, five-string banjo. And I also sort of took this interesting route because two of my favorite songwriters, Richard Farina and Joni Mitchell, played the Appalachian dulcimer. So that's what I picked up as my next instrument. It made total sense to me. I loved it. And it called me to dig into the traditions and history that went along with it. So then I ended up listening to Gene Ritchie and to Paul Clayton and to albums on Folkways Records and really getting a big intro education to some of the other sounds of Appalachian music. And eventually a friend of mine sold me his banjo. I don't know why, and I don't even know why I bought it, but I thought, well, I'll give this a try. And as I was touring, it turned out that one of the hosts of my cross-country Thumb Across Canada tour with my first partner was a banjo teacher. Oh, I'll show you how to play. And he did. And he did a great job. We're still good friends. Barry just had his 80th birthday last year.
Congratulations, and, Barry.
You know, and I dug into that deeply. And I was in a group at the time that really, we ate and drank and slept and lived old time country music and early bluegrass. So that was really, you know, that was really an awesome background for everything else I wanted to do.
Well, and of course, the area that you live in now, out in the Cumberland and through West Virginia, and there's such a strong tradition of that style of music. And what we see is there's such a renewed interest in it, only there's a whole new version of it. I mean, it's just interesting how people take the old and make it new.
You know, it's not only interesting, it's very important. One of the things I'm working on right now is I'm on a team of people who are putting together a traveling exhibit on the history of women in old time music for the Birthplace of Country Music Museum. And we're really focused on not only the history, but the trajectory. Where's this going? You know, there are a couple of new generations of people coming up whose either their parents played or their parents dragged them off to fiddlers conventions like we just got back from in Clifftop, West Virginia, or any number of reasons. But I feel like the thing about this music is it was never stagnant. Everybody did what they wanted with it. And that's part of keeping it alive. It's part of giving people a reason to continue playing it.
Now, have you guys done anything with Smithsonian Folkways?
We have, actually. One of our Grammy-winning recordings is called Celebration, a tribute to Ella Jenkins. Ella is probably the first children's artist that they put on Folkways. Oh. Mo Ash ran it many years ago. I'm thinking about 60 years ago, because this weekend we were just part of a Zoom 98th birthday party for Ella.
What?
And there's a couple of other projects that we've worked with Smithsonian Folkways on. And that label certainly was a huge backbone of a lot of my education in traditional music.
Okay, so Marcy, how did you guys meet?
We met at a festival in Canada where Kathy was playing solo and I was playing with my old-time string band. I had a band with four young girls playing pretty raucous old-time music. We were called the Bosom Buddies. And we were studying the old stuff. We got together with Kathy. They would put the festival puts you in workshops with other people. And we were in a couple workshops with Kathy. And we really had a great time. And as I got to know Kathy over the years, the next couple of years, like when we're in an old-time situation, we play old-time music. But I also grew up with swing and jazz and other influences. And Kathy had a foot in swing, also heavily in country swing. So we liked a lot of the same things. And also we both loved working with kids. So we had a lot in common right away. But that was 1980.
So in the beginning, were you just sort of playing together? When did you get together as a duo? Was that later?
It was later.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, the first time we played together was in a group at backstage at the folk festival, and the night wore on and people kept falling off and going back, going to bed. And we were kind of disturbing people where we were. So the two of us went to a place in the hotel where no one else was. It was under construction. It was kind of dark and dirty. And so we're sitting on this pretty rank carpet playing old time tunes. And I don't know what time it was, 3 or 4 in the morning or something, but turns out there was someone staying up there and this door opened. It was Elizabeth Cotton, who wrote Freight Train Going So Fast, just a total legend. We'd been hoping to meet her, but not under these circumstances. And she stepped out of her room and she looked at us with a look that would stop an entire junior high school assembly of kids, you know, from goofing around. And she just said, "I pray to the Lord to make you children a little less happy." Our hero was in her room praying for us to be quiet.
that is such a great story. That is so funny. You know, I don't know if you've ever been to the Folk Alliance.
Many times.
Okay. Well, you know, they have all those little breakout rooms in the hotel and it's pretty rocking till whatever time of the night.
Sure.
So did you sort of share this love of children's music? Was that kind of what brought y'all together? Or just in general, was it sort of everything? Old time
I think
music?
It was really everything. Yeah. I think that's one of the things that clicked. I had already had a career for about 6-7 years of performing both contemporary and traditional folk and eclectic roots music, as well as playing a lot of music for kids and families, which sort of got generated initially from my work at Rough Rock Demonstration School. But then when I was at McGill, I substitute taught in daycare centers, and I'd always take my guitar and sing with the kids. And then the word got around, oh, get that girl with the guitar. She'll come sing with the kids and you'll have music too. And that kind of exploded a little bit. And next thing you know, I'd get a call from the Girl Scouts. Will you come sing at our meeting? Will you come do this? Come do that. It turned out Marcy had done very similar work. And so there was a lot of synergy in the fact that these were related things to us that we wanted to do. And we spent many, many years doing evening concerts at folk clubs and concert series or arts councils, and then doing things for young people in the afternoons. And it's a real fit for us. We've just released our 50th album. And out of those 50 albums, I think 20 or 21 of them are for kids and families.
I love that. Yeah, I remember a kids album when I was little, and I played the heck out of this thing because it was all about children's fairy tales, I guess, but in an irreverent way. And as a kid, you're like, oh, I think they just said the word whatever, you know.
Yeah, it just said underpants on the record.
They just said underpants, exactly. And you know, as a kid, you love that. And I love the fact that you guys have done all these children's and family albums. When did you put the first album out as a duo?
Our first official, Marcy played on my first solo album.
And Kathy played on my solo album.
But let me give a timeline here. My first solo album was a kid's album called Grandma Slid Down the Mountain for Rounder. And that was around 1984. And either right around the same time, I did an album called Dog on My Time. And Marcy and another member of her band, the Bosom Buddies, came down to the DC area to be part of that and sing harmonies. Marcy did a solo kids album. And I think it was about 87 or so before we buckled down to our first duo album called Fink and Marxer. And it was on Sugar Hill Records. Right before the album that we did called Blue Rose, which involved Marcy, myself, Lori Lewis, Molly Mason, and Sally Van Meter. And it was, I think, one of the earlier recordings that made an effort to highlight some of the really great women in old time and bluegrass and sort of acoustic country music. And since that time, you know, I mean, between the two of us, we have 50 albums. We've also produced at least 150 recordings for other people.
So, well, and you've been nominated for, 14 Grammys, and you've won two. And that's incredible in and of itself. What was it like to win a Grammy?
Well, when you've lost 10 times in a row and NPR is calling you the Susan Lucci of the Grammys, it's amazing to win. But I also felt like there was a big symbolism the two times that we won, because I feel like we worked very hard to get that category honoring people who not just made great kids recordings, but who also were in the field, in the trenches, working with kids in the classrooms, you know, that their music, their recordings, it's the Recording Academy. It's not the Everything Else You Do Academy, but their recordings were informed by how much they loved working with children. And I feel like we were able to help open the doors for more and more people like that to get honored with nominations. And that felt really wonderful.
Right on. And what is it you love most about working with children?
You know, for us, I think the focus of working with kids, it's almost like a reverse focus of working with an adult audience. An adult audience will sit patiently and let us play something from, you know, the 1400s and then change it up and do this and do that. And what kids really judge is by what they're doing at any given moment. So we become more audience. The audience becomes our plaything in a sense, you know. Okay, now we ask for responses all the time. We ask for participation. Our whole kids show is participation.
Totally participatory, not just for the kids, but for the parents. We do American Sign Language. We have hand motions to certain things. We have call and response songs. We teach everybody how to yodel. And it's really about a gathering in a way. And our adult shows are also like that, but I think, you know, Marcy really nails it when she says, you know, what kids care the most about is what they're doing at that moment. Well, what we care about is that we're all doing the same thing at that moment when we're in a concert hall with all of them. And so it's our job to be this massive group activity leader with great music. And we also feel strongly that we were, along with Ella Jenkins and a couple other people, you know, when kids and families came to hear us play, they saw two women who could play 14 instruments and represent those instruments well and be band leaders. And, you know, there's some role modeling going on here, both for girls and for boys, because, you know, boys would come to this and go, oh, a girl can do that. Yeah, you're changing minds. You're bringing it forward.
It seems to me that children have like this incredible joy when they're singing or participating too, that you almost don't see in adults as much. It's just unbridled, you know, when they're happy. Do they give you good feedback?
Oh, totally.
They do. Yeah. They really do. And you can really tell by scanning the crowd and looking at the reactions, how old they are and how much they focus in other kinds of activities. It's really hilarious how different each age is.
And, you know, we are still connected to some of the kids and families who grew up on our music. So we just celebrated the birthday of a 40-year-old who happens to have some special needs, but she has stuck with our music and we've stayed in touch with her and her family. We wrote her own song for her 40th birthday, and she came to a concert and we taught the whole audience the song. Similarly, there's quite a few kids in their 20s, 30s, and 40s who, you know, now they bring their kids to our concerts. Or I just recently heard from a parent who said, oh, my daughter's 32, but you got to know how important you were to our whole family for so many years. And that's pretty darn thrilling. I mean, it brings the deeper meaning of what we were after. You know, if all these years later, if 20 and 30 and 40 years later, this is still one of their fond memories, I think we've done our job.
Agreed. And what is it you think works so well in your songwriting partnership?
Well, the interesting thing is we've written very few songs together.
That is interesting.
We definitely advise and chime in on each other's songs, and we're very open to suggestions and all of that, but we write songs very, very differently. So there's only in our whole catalog a couple of songs that we've written together. One of the most recent ones was the closing song of the musical that we wrote called All Wigged Out. It's a theatrical musical, which we filmed on account of the pandemic. We couldn't get into a theater. But it's about Marcy's experience with breast cancer. And the closing song is completely about us. And it's called Two Peas in a Pod. And we absolutely wrote that song together. And have we written one together since?
It was fun.
No.
No, we haven't since. But what we would do is generally we have a focus for an album. And then we kind of go our separate ways and come up with whatever ideas we're going to come up with, come back together and bounce them off each other and go back to and write songs.
But you're doing well now?
I am, yes. Thank. Spoiler alert, I'm still here.
Yeah.
yes. I am doing well. And a big focus of the film is Kathy's and my relationship and also Kathy's caretaking abilities. I've been a patient a few times in my life, and I think I do it better now because I've had practice. And the same thing goes with caregiving. Sometimes the first time someone's in a position where they need to do caretaking for another person, it's so hard. It's never easy, but after you get into it and you've taken care of a few people, there's a process and you know what to expect. Nothing is open-ended, really. And being a patient, there's an element of that too. It's like, I've got to be able to shift everything down as slow as I can. Just take a breath, just take a step and hope I wake up tomorrow, you know? But for people who haven't had those experiences, I think they'll watch the film, which is actually a musical with comedy in it. And they may feel like they've had their first experiences. So if they're in a situation of caregiving or any kind of illness, they'll have some experience under their belts and some things to fall back on.
I'm just going to say that Marcy is incredibly brilliant in this film. And one of the things that it shows is her trajectory from being a Grammy-winning multi-instrumentalist musician to having total neuropathy from chemo, not being able to play music, and building her way back to, you know, well, I call it a normal career. I'm gonna use the term everybody uses now, the new normal. You know, the new normal is different for Marcy. She still has neuropathy, but she's learned how to make her way around it and play like a fiend, and she's amazing.
So was it kind of cathartic, or did things kind of come full circle when you were able to put out this film? Obviously, you were on the backside of it when you did this. So
I think the first performance we did after I could start to play again, mm-hmm. which is actually on YouTube, it's called Remembering Elizabeth Cotton or When Kathy Met Marcy. That felt cathartic to me because I was so excited and happy to be playing anything in front of an audience and something that we'd worked on. But the film for me is not so cathartic in a deep emotional way. But what it does is I get to point out things that I didn't know about being a patient, and they're common things. So everybody who's any kind of a long-term or serious patient goes through these things. And like people saying, giving you what we call unsolicited advice to the process. People say, enjoy the journey. Well, I can't enjoy this journey. It's more like being dragged through a car wash, right, and having water thrown, you know. So all those kinds of things are in the play. And I think Kathy and I are both really good at taking serious situations and addressing them head on, but not leaving people down. That's the last thing that I wanted to do. I didn't want to make a project that patients would be leery of seeing and that they'd feel anything but lifted up when they leave.
And that's pretty much the feedback that we're getting. And we've recently gotten into a big slew of film festivals and won a handful of awards for it. So we're still on the Earn While You Learn program of figuring out how to do this. We've never made a film before. We've never tried to distribute a film. We've never been in film festivals. You know, I'm going to be 69 years old tomorrow. Why not learn something new right now?
No time like the present.
No time.
And, you know,
like
I totally agree with you that there's always like a little bit of humor in every situation, even when it's a serious situation. If you really take a step back, there is humor there. Mm-hmm. And you're right. People do try to give you advice and they have no idea what you're going through. But you sort of take that in stride too when you're going through something like that, because they think they're trying to help you out. And so there's a little bit of that as well.
Some of them do. And yeah, some of them are simply servicing themselves in a way where they're not thinking about you at all. And
true,
the interesting
true.
Thing about the film is that I think people recognize that. You know, they watch this scene on Unsolicited Advice and the song that goes with it, and they go, oh my God, I've done that. Uh-oh. Okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. You know, I mean, I feel like everything that we do, I always go back to this phrase that a friend of ours, Scott Ainsley, used years ago. And that phrase is, in the service of what? What's the purpose of doing this? It wasn't just to be cathartic. We felt that we could create a piece of art that had value for people, that had value in teaching them about advocacy and teaching them about patient care and teaching them about being family caregivers and teaching them about, you know, finding the humor in some of the stupidest, weirdest stuff. And, you know, I think a lot of times when people write stuff just for the purpose of being cathartic, what they've written is something that helps them, but doesn't necessarily help someone else. That's not always the case. But we had a further purpose here. If it wasn't going to serve other people, then we could get it out of our system and walk away. And we did a lot of readings in early stages to sort of try and figure out how do audiences feel about this? What's the perception? And learned a lot from that, rebuilt certain pieces from that, but also learned that we were giving people something that they didn't have. Sometimes it was just giving them permission to talk about cancer in a way they'd never done it before. So for some people, it's still taboo. It's crazy.
It is. It is. And well, and everyone goes through whatever they're going through in their own way. And so some people want everybody to know and other people don't want anyone to know. And there's that individual side of things. But I know you guys have been involved, and I love this, in all sorts of you know, activism. You know, even on the new album, All New, there's songs in there, not every song, but some, you know, that definitely are talking about various subjects. And I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the work that you've done in the bluegrass arena in promoting diversity and why that was important to you in particular.
Well, for one thing, we both came up in that world at a time where there was a rarity of prominent females, right? And both of us had the experiences of performing at bluegrass festivals where somebody would come up and say, oh, pretty good for a girl, or gosh, I didn't know a girl could play bluegrass banjo, or my goodness, you're flat picking. And we're like, yeah, we got 10 fingers, we got brains, we got intelligence, you know, what the heck? So, you know, that's the beginning of it. We also have a great interest in the history of women in old time country music, contemporary country music. Marcy and I toured and performed with Patsy Montana, the first woman in country music to sell a million records in 1935, the song I Want to Be Cowboy's Sweetheart. We produced Patsy's last album, but we also mentor a lot of people in up-and-coming generations, both in bluegrass and other styles of music. And we feel like it's incredibly important for the doors to be as wide open to participation as possible. That wasn't always the case for us. It still isn't always the case for us. And, you know, amongst the many different kinds of activism that we've participated in, we have work very hard to make it to at least move us forward in everyone feeling welcome, regardless of race, regardless of religion, regardless of sexual preference. We're talking about music here. And I see, you know, there's always going to be another distance to go. But in the last few years, there's been great progress because there's been more discussions. International Bluegrass Music Association assigned a diversity, equity, and inclusion task force. There's a wonderful organization called Bluegrass Pride. There's another great organization in Texas, Decolonizing the Music Room. And I think it has also become easier because we have some incredible spokespeople like Rhiannon Giddens, who is using her notoriety to open the doors wider and to make people feel welcome. And to do that by example, not just by speeches and this and that. And I feel like I'm excited about the future, but I also know we have a ways to go. But that's part of, you know, that drives us. The next generation and the opportunities for them really drives us. And I'm excited about what can happen.
You know, I had the pleasure of interviewing Amethyst Kia, And she's African-American artist, female artist.
Sure.
And she was talking about how she's always loved traditional styles of music, only she never thought that it was something that as an African-American woman or African-American in general, that it was kind of open to her. And then she saw Rhiannon Giddens play, and it was a real kind of eye-opening moment. She said, yeah, I can love this. I can play this. It's open for me. And so it just takes one to start opening that door to everybody else and creating that path.
And 25 years ago, Rhiannon was one of my banjo students at the Swannanoa Gathering.
Oh, nice.
A little
cute. That's so great.
Really cute.
and, you know, the trajectory of CC Conway starting the Black Banjo Gathering and the Carolina Chocolate Drops meeting. And that's important. Every time anyone sees diversity on stage, it gives them permission to think that this could be me. And if it's not you because you're not a person of color from a different background, you're still recognizing that this is for everyone. One of our favorite banjo players right now, somebody we've been mentoring for about 6 years, his name is Trey Wellington. He's got a brand new album out called Black Banjo. He's a killer bluegrass banjo player. You know, there may be more Black bluegrass banjo players, but I have not met them. And on the other hand, I'm going to say Trey is going to be that example. And 10 years from now, we're going to have 20 of them.
I can't wait to hear his music then.
Oh, he's amazing.
Awesome.
He's
awesome
totally
kid.
Amazing.
Let's talk about your new album, All New, because is it all new? Like, is every song all new, or is it?
Every song is all new. So we've been friends with Tom Paxton since the late 1970s, both of us. And we've worked with him through the years. We produced his first Grammy-nominated CD, which was a kid's album called Your Shoes, My Shoes. We toured the UK with him twice. And on one of those tours, I plugged a mini disc machine into the board every night just for the heck of it. And the last two shows sounded great right off the board. And we put that album out called Live in the UK, and it got a Grammy nomination. We've produced another album of his called Boat in the Water. And through the years, Tom and I have written a handful of songs together. Not a whole lot, but a handful. And we like those songs. And about 3 years ago, just, you know, a couple months prior to the pandemic, we had decided that we wanted to write songs together more regularly. He lives in Arlington, Virginia, not too far from us. And we just decided that we were going to try and get together once a week and make this happen. And we started getting together in person once a week when we were both in town. And then the pandemic happened. And so we continued it on Zoom. And we met every Wednesday at 10 a.m. and hung in there until a song was written. And then one or the other of us would tweak the song. We'd send it back and forth, tweak it some more. And we amassed quite a catalog of songs that we really, really like. And they're very, very diverse. You know, we've got Around, we've got bluegrass songs, we've got swing songs, we've got country songs, we've got love songs, we've got political songs. And it really was every week we'd get online, we'd look at each other, catch up, how you doing, all that. And now what are we going to write about today? And a lot of times, both of us have been keeping lists. So I have this great line, or I have this idea, or I have this title, or, you know, there's three songs on there about female outlaws of the great old West. And I kept sending Tom articles about these women. I said, let's do a trilogy here. You know, let's do something about Stagecoach Mary, the first Black woman to deliver the mail by stagecoach in Montana. And we're both always game to give it a whirl. And we just have a very easygoing way of working with each other. And so it was incredibly fun. And I guess back in November, I said, you know, Tom, there's so many songs here. Let's make it simple. Let's make a live recording. We'll just make it easy. You know, I don't want to go in the studio for 25 sessions and do this and do, you know, we agreed to do that. Next thing you know, we picked 28 songs. I went, this is definitely a double CD. And we weren't even thinking of making CDs at the time. We were just, you know, somehow going to do a digital release. The next thing you know, we're at one of our favorite studios, Tonal Park in Tacoma Park, Maryland, run by our friend Charlie Pilzer, who was with Marcy and myself, the co-producer, but he was also the engineer. And we, in January, put together this live concert scenario. We only allowed 20 people in the two performances, masked and vaccinated and safe, but it made us feel like, okay, we are performing to an audience. It's real. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a great band. Kimber Ludeker from Delamay played mandolin and fiddle and sang a little bit. And our friend Alex Lacamont played bass, and Marcy played about 12 different instruments. We had rehearsals twice a week. It was just super fun and definitely all new. And then we sort of at the 11th hour said, well, we may as well stream it. And the next thing you know, we had 500 people buying tickets to the stream. And we went, hey, we could put out the double CD. You know, we've got a budget now. Let's go ahead and do that. And it, you know, the snowball just kept on rolling. And it finally came out July 29th. And we all loved the experience and loved the songs. You know, it was the first time, I mean, Marcy and I can play music together all the time during the pandemic, but it was the first time where we got together with a solid group of people and said, we're forming a sound here. We're going to do this. And I think it felt great for everybody. And it was kind of a, I'd call it kind of a love fest.
And was it really nice to have that creative challenge to look forward to during COVID where, hey, I'm going to create a song each Wednesday and collaborate with someone outside.
That was really nice. I mean, Marcy and I never stopped working during the pandemic. We produced 18 online festivals. We recorded no less than 600 instructional videos for various different companies that we work for on various different instruments. We put on online banjo festivals and contests. We didn't stop, but this was something I looked forward to every week because every different thing that we do brings something else in our art hearts together.
Well, you know, it's a really great album. Are you going to be touring?
We're not really touring because Tom's doing most of his touring with the Don Juans, John Vesner and Don Henry, who we love to pieces. Marcy and I are doing our touring together, but we're also doing some touring behind All Wigged Out, and our calendars just haven't really meshed, which is why August 9th, which is tomorrow, I don't know when you're going to air this, but August 9th, we're doing a Zoom virtual CD release party, and there will be some performances down the line together, but, you know, I think there's one in Baltimore in January, but not a really big tour.
Well, you guys are very inspiring to me. Just everything you've done with your music career and your activism and how prolific you've been at putting out music. People don't realize how hard that is. It's hard to write songs. It's not the easiest thing to do. And obviously play all the instruments that you play. Thank you so much for stopping by Diddy TV to talk about All New. It's a really great album. And come see us in Memphis. We'd love to have you down visiting.
Can't wait.
We'd love to. So much legendary music history there. We'd love to wander around and experience.
And thanks for covering this project. It's, you know, when am I ever going to be involved in a project again with somebody as legendary, but still a close friend as Tom Paxton? And that number of new songs, and we keep on writing. We haven't stopped. You know, in fact, 2 weeks later, we were back online and we're like, do we have any songs left in us? Let's find out. You know, the next 3 weeks, we wrote three really good songs. And then I was like, I wonder if I can still write a song by myself. And I wrote a couple of songs by myself that I liked. And we're just, you know, as artists, you do what you do. And if you get recognition for it, that's great. If you don't get recognition for it, it ain't going to stop you. You're just going to be doing it.
Well said. And thank you, guys. Big shout out to Tom, too, on the album. He wasn't here today, but
he's a gem.
He's a gem. Thank you so much. Thank Y'all you. Have a great rest of your week.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that's all for today's show. Please be sure to check out All New, the latest album from Tom Paxton, Kathy Fink, and Marcy Marxer. It features over 24 tracks ranging love songs, comedy, history, social justice, and just pure great storytelling. The styles range from folk to bluegrass to swing and even a Celtic song. There's something for everyone, so please be sure to share with your friends and help spread the word about this record and about today's show, too. The more toes we get tapping, the better. From all of us at Diddy TV, thanks again for tuning in today, and we hope to see you again real soon, right here on Insights.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.